Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted SEO podcast host. I'm here with the indomitable Ryan Jones. Why don't you give yourself an intro, what you do and your experience for those people who haven't had the pleasure of coming across you yet?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's actually described me as indomitable before, so that's a new one. I appreciate that. But yeah, for those who don't know me, and to avoid confusion with the other Ryan Jones that's well known in SEO of Razorfish, I'm the marketing manager at SEO Testing, so involved in everything marketing for them. So SEO, bit of paid when we choose to do it, social media, all that kind of thing. Been in SEO / digital marketing for just coming up to 10 years now. So I started younger. I started when I was 16 officially. It was my first job officially out of school, and never left. And yeah, worked agency side, client side, in-house, freelance. I've done a bit of freelance work for people as well. So I think it's fair to say I've seen SEO and marketing from absolutely all angles.
I love that too. I've been in that same position, because it's not the same animal when, you know, it's your own project versus you're working on a brand and you brought in-house versus freelancing. Even freelancing and agency has some pretty big differences. Which spot so far has been your favorite?
I think my favorite has definitely been in-house. I think the trade-off that comes, so one thing I did always appreciate about agency work was getting to work on a range of sites in different industries, sectors, all that kind of thing. Just because we know that different tactics work for different companies and different niches and that kind of thing. So it is always good to sort of get a broad experience. But yeah, to really dive deep into a brand and learn all about that particular sector is always really interesting. And yeah, I definitely prefer in-house.
I always likened it to driving an elephant, because it doesn't corner well. But if you keep the momentum going forward, you can smash through a lot of unexpected boundaries.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I suppose if you're talking about things that don't corner well, you could liken it to driving a muscle car, I suppose, as well.
That's definitely true. So what's been the most challenging of the individual niches that you've been assigned to, either at agency or in-house? What's the hardest game to play?
I don't know whether it would be a particular sort of industry or niche or anything, but I think going back to my agency days, I think the most difficult challenges I was always presented with were when you would take on SEO work from sort of really small companies that work in sectors that just really don't have a lot of search volume at all. They have maybe as they might be pretty dominant in an industry, but it just is not known about, or it doesn't get many visitors. Like when I worked in agency side, we had a client who did like industrial seals, and that's all they did. And they absolutely dominated the market. And any term you could think of for industrial seals, they would rank number one and dominated paid for them as well. So it's like they were the place to go. And I think at that point you kind of just hit a ceiling, and you have the discussion with the client of, okay, well, we're basically number one for everything at this point. We're still paying you however much a month we're paying you. Like, where do we go from here? And having to then explain to him that eventually, if you stop doing the SEO work, someone will overtake you. It might take a while, but someone will eventually get there. So it becomes a communication issue of like having to explain to them that now you're kind of having to pay to stay at the top of the market, and the only ceiling that we have now is waiting for the industry to actually become more known about or grow a little bit.
Yeah, those obscure industries like fry oil management. I've done a brand, Save Fry Oil. It's very niche. I mean, I've worked with, you know, poop scoopers. There was one company they did, they took old oil. They had a machine that would take oil that they took out from cars, and you could heat your auto mechanic shop with that oil cleanly.
Wow.
So, like, super niche, like, application. So once you top out on that market, I guess that comes to kind of a bigger picture about SEO that I've been that I talked touched on with Melissa Pop, is that a lot of SEOs just kind of look at the keyword research and say, okay, well, this is the market size, and that this is all it really is, and I'm going to try to find the highest value keyword, you know, highest volume keyword to target. But it leaves aside the fact that there's so many opportunities now to create demand. You know, there's different channels and methods that you can pump the gas and bring higher visibility. And those type of actions, while anathema in like 2003 of like, oh, that's not SEO, now it kind of feels like we're being called beyond the boundaries of just straight up just SEO. This is the search volume, and looking for how can we do more. What's been your experience in like that do more part of pushing the boundaries of what we've understood our role to be?
Yeah, I completely agree with that point, in the sense that I think SEO is becoming now, and it will become more multidisciplined, in a sense that, like, we know that people are eventually going to start use. I don't know whether Google will be replaced completely. I doubt it ever will, but we're going to get more and more people using LLMs to search for what they need and that kind of thing. We're starting to see that now. I mean, if we look at our analytics data, we are starting to get new trials through and things like that from people who found us using ChatGPT and that kind of thing. So, one, we are going to have to look at it from that point of view. But then, yeah, in terms of creating demand, like, we're now just starting to look at it as well from a point of creating demand via social media and that kind of thing. But it's all still linking back into SEO. I mean, it's still, I don't necessarily think it's an SEO problem, in the sense that, like, we've hit this ceiling. Like, the problem that we're actually facing at the minute with, like, AI overviews and stuff coming out now is our, we've seen, it's hit our own site as well, in like the trend that we've seen of informational traffic going down, and our new challenge is now having to not necessarily create demand to account for that, but like find demand in new places to replace that lost traffic that I don't know if we're ever going to get back, in terms of I can only ever see AI overviews increasing and getting better as the language models improve and that kind of thing. So it's not, I think we're having to find a replacement for that lost traffic, and that will come from, yeah, like other search engines, social media, that kind of thing, and even more traditional marketing as well.
Yeah, I share your concern that the genie is out of the bottle, the Pandora's box has been opened, and what kind of opened my eyes is some of the continuing drip of documents that have come out of the litigation against Google, kind of both proving some of the long-held theories that we had. But there was a release, I think it was just yesterday, where they were talking about, you know, we don't use LLMs largely within these individual signals because we want to be able to define and fine-tune them. And so that was their whole, like, aside from RankBrain and one other element specifically that's very LLM in nature, they said, we specifically focus and tune, and we want that clarity so the engineers can turn these dials, which, coming back to, you know, the AJ Cohn view of it's Goog enough, of the enshittification of SERPs, the rampant population of Reddit answers popping up everywhere, AI overviews incapable of determining whether Lily Ray is 9 years old or 100 years old, and the choking off of small publisher sites. It means if that documentation showing that they are holding those dials and still they're not, you know, be held to some mysterious LLM machine behind the scenes making these calls, they're choosing these SERPs. They're choosing for these search results to be this crappy, to be this difficult to find the answers. And so that's just kind of wild on one level and totally discouraging on the next level, and even more infuriating when you add, they had a conference and they brought out creators who they basically told, we don't owe you traffic. And if that's the attitude of Google towards the publishers who have invested, they are travel bloggers, they're food bloggers, they're doing the things that they've been told to do that are supposed to reflect online, and then it's been rewarded. Like, there's half of a contract, a social contract, that is now just being done away with piece by piece. It's a very challenging time to be a content creator when that, you know, social contract or that understood implicit side of Google of, oh, we'll show you in results, but you'll get the click, to we're an answer engine and we don't owe you a click.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think the moment that, I don't know, I can't remember whether it was the Wall Street Journal or wherever it was that came out, but there was that quote from the ex-Googler where it says that directing traffic to publisher sites was a necessary evil. I think the moment that that came out was, I think, the almost like the point of no return in terms of, I think we can now say that Google, I think, are deliberately making results shittier in the sense that they want to promote all these AI overviews and that kind of thing, and they talk about AI overviews as like the next best thing and the next evolution in SERPs and that kind of thing. And now that they're linking to their own other SERPs in it within AI overviews, is, I think my particular conspiracy theory is that that's all just to drive more ads traffic, in the sense that someone starts with an informational query, they read the AI overview, they'll see another link in the AI overview to another SERP, and then eventually they keep clicking until eventually, like after all these steps, eventually they're going to click on an ad, and then Google will make some revenue from that. So I think that's the way they're trying to go, is keep, rather than sending traffic to these publishers, which has been fine for so long, if people are eventually going to start using Google less, we need to make more revenue, so let's make the results worse, let's keep them on the SERP as long as possible, and then let's eventually get them to a stage where we can like take them through the whole journey from information to purchase, and then when they're ready to purchase, we can send them to a PPC link that they can then go and purchase from.
Yeah, and it reminds me so much of the wild days of Facebook before 2008 to 2010, where you could make a ton of money just publishing content on Facebook. You know, you would have these algorithms that would reward your page and or profile, and it was just a wild, like you could get a huge amount of success, and then the algorithm changed, and now it's 100,000% pay to play. Everything that could possibly lead to revenue is curated into the most extractive, expensive process possible. So it is what it is. Meaningless, so says the teacher. You know, to quote Ecclesiastes and get super philosophical about it. But I think there are still there's still meat on the bone. You know, we're not you know, yes, there are drops whenever AI overview comes in, but there's also some silver lining of, it looks like maybe the clicks that come through LLMs are far more qualified, and yeah, if they do discover your brand, it's a turd that gets shined. So there's some silver in the lining. So what's been your view or processes that you've been testing or refining in this interesting transitional state in SEO? Where's your head been at in terms of wins or adjusting strategies?
Yeah, so for the longest time, we've recently like really started to look at where we're going to take our marketing going forward, because I joined SEO testing in, I think, April 2023, and at that point the site was still relatively small in terms of organic search, like I think just over 2,000 organic clicks a month or something that it was getting, which for a small sort of SaaS business was still pretty good. We were using the sort of traditional SaaS playbook of create all this great informational content, put some CTAs in there, more people see the content, obviously then people convert and that kind of thing. But yeah, we got them to a stage where we were at over 10,000 clicks a month with it, like, pretty quickly. So we grew really, like, really rapidly. I think we hit a peak of about 16,000 clicks in a month, which was great for us. And then we started to see this sort of stagnation when AI overviews first started to come in. And then now we've seen a kind of drop off in terms of, like, AI overviews at the minute have kind of hit their peak. I'm sure the numbers will continue to grow, so we might see even less traffic come through. But at the minute, we're not now losing traffic as much as we were. We're kind of stagnated. So the conversation has become of, where do we go now? I mean, we still get a good level of organic traffic, and that is what it is. That's people who will find us through researching through a competitor or something like that, and it's like having to look at these different solutions. But yeah, we kind of sat down and had a look at, like, where our traffic came from, where that traffic was that was converting and that kind of thing. So we kind of focused on social media, which is why I've started like have a more active focus on trying to grow my social media presence. So hence why I'm all over LinkedIn like a rash, and all over Blue Sky and Threads and any social media that exists, I'm probably on it somewhere. Yeah, and then looking into now more trying to get featured in LLMs, because we see that we still get really small numbers of LLM traffic, but the traffic that we do get from LLMs, like as you just pointed out, it seems to be really high intent, and it is actually converting at a much higher rate than the organic traffic that we get in terms of percentage. We see more people will click on guides that we class as key events in J4, because these are like really important guides, and people will click on like the free trial button and they'll sign up to a trial. So yeah, it's really changed. We are still creating new content. We are still trying to create as many clicks as we can through organic search, because it, at the end of the day, it is still the primary acquisition channel that we have. But the way in which that we create content has changed. Whereas before we were doing keyword research, finding sort of potential there, creating the content and distributing. Now we're using social media, for instance, as a kind of gauge of interest. And if one of my posts really does well on LinkedIn, then that might signify that this is something people are generally interested in. And then we'll create a piece of content for search around that and promote it that way. And that seems to be what's working at the minute.
That's interesting, because it's... you know, that kind of cross-channel marketing, something I was discussing with Matt Brooks of SEOteric, of, you know, how can we leverage our footholds elsewhere? Or really, it's almost like, Ross Simmons, and kind of create once and redistribute forever, of taking what used to be, you know, the SEO playbook was, okay, you create a blog post, and then I'll create another blog post. And then I'll create another blog post. And it seems to me that it's actually now like horizontal versus vertical. So like, okay, I'm going to create a blog post. I'm going to create a version of it for a LinkedIn Pulse. I'll create a version of it for my Substack. Create a version of it that's going to go out to my email newsletter followers, which then also gets published to another different site. And then maybe turn it into a slide deck, save that on SlideShare, take the video and not just post it to YouTube, but Vidler, Vimeo, you know, three or four different syndicators, and, you know, take one piece of content through these multiple hoops, you know, find a way to turn it into a short for YouTube, you know, and then turn it into, you know, medium form content for Instagram. And so it seems, that kind of horizontalization for each content piece is something that is kind of anathema to a lot of marketing, SEO specific marketing people, because they've been used to, okay, I just need to hire content writers and they'll write a piece of content and we'll publish it as a blog.
And then if that doesn't work, maybe build a few links as well and then see what happens.
Yeah, and then maybe we'll get some links. And then, yeah, so I think the play, you know, is basically like broadening it out, because that also increases, you know, some of those brand signals that Google says that, you know, are part of the, a bigger part of the matrix now. You know, I had, you know, I was working with Lead Truffle. They're like an AI lead qualification tool that I love, because it's like you put it on the site and instead of a form, it starts a text conversation, which is great, but they weren't showing up for their brand name. So it's like Google saying, yeah, you want to drive branded traffic, and you're like, well, I don't show up for my brand query, and I don't know why. We've been online for over a month and built links, have content, everything you're supposed to do, but you don't show up for your brand. And I've seen it multiple times now. I've confirmed with several other SEOers of running into this particular problem, that sometimes like your domain might be spoiled, or that brand name that you have is the intent of it is so mixed that Google doesn't want to, is very slow to add a brand, you know, like save fry oil. Like that's a informational query of like, how do you save fry oil? Well, that's your brand name. It's going to take more, but you can't get those clicks, which Google uses as part of your brand value. You can't show up for your own brand. So that's kind of a tricky situation.
Yeah, we had it for a little bit as well, in the sense that like, unless people, like when I first started, I noticed it didn't happen for very long, but when, if you Googled SEO testing as one word, which is our brand name, it was all fine. Like our brand name would show up. But if you Googled SEO testing as the kind of, the sort of job, as in SEO is one word and testing is one word, if they Googled that, mm-hmm. then they would be served guides on SEO testing for a little while from, like, obviously we had our guide on there and we were at the top, which was fine. But then you have like a guide from Ahrefs and other people on the web. And for a little point in time, our brand name like didn't show up for a little bit. But yeah, that's all fine now and been sorted. I think if you search SEO testing as two words now, we our brand is still at the top, and then there's all the guides underneath, which is fine.
My solve for that actually runs counter to another thing that Googlers said, and very recently, which was that that schema doesn't directly impact your rankings. And mm-hmm. it was the week after we added the about page with site name schema onto the site, and got about links to that about page, that Google finally gave up the ghost and recognized that that was a valid entity. Of course, pushing your site out there and not having an about page is kind of one of those like duh moments, but also like, you know, not having site name schema and then adding it, or doing it, I've seen the opposite too, of like somebody messed with the Yoast settings and changed the site name that was reporting and their entity just tanked. They stopped showing up for their branded entity name. And so for Sullivan to march out there and say schema never has an impact on rankings, well, that's not true. It absolutely can. In certain cases, and I'm certain that if we dug through it, we could find other examples of, yeah, actually, schema can be a ranking changer. Now, they'll always use their double entendres and clever ways of saying, oh, well, it's not a direct ranking factor, or it's not something we consider. But, you know, that's the same guys that we got put through for years and got gaslit that click signals weren't a key part of rankings. And now we know from the legal side that DOJ found out, yes, click behavior is not just used, it's one of the three primary elements that they use to rank sites. So
yeah, this is the conversation that me and Nick had when I first started, and I remember we joked that we were saying that at the end of the day, like, even if people say it doesn't, we know that site impact, like the on-site metrics, have an impact on search. Like, it is 100%. Like, you can't change our minds about that. And like, it was fine. It was good to finally see that come out, because, like, on one hand, it was like ourselves being vindicated for having that theory in the first place, which is fine. But our theory comes from testing of, like, we changed the page, on-site metrics got better, and then rankings improved and things like that. But also, like, the fact that Rand Fishkin for ages was shouting that from the rooftops, that like on-site metrics have an impact, and everyone who would like blindly follow his Google lead was like, no, you're wrong, just listen to Google, and that kind of thing. So it was nice to see him vindicated for that finally, and that kind of thing. And but yeah, like just to quickly jump on what you said about Schema and stuff like that, like just from our own internal tests that we knew, like, so we have one of our standard processes for a little while was we'd have a video created for every blog post that we did that was published for YouTube, and then we would put that at the top of the fold on the blog as well, just in case people didn't want to scroll through and read a 2,000 word blog post, they could watch a 4 or 5 minute YouTube video. And one, we found that having that video on the blog post increased the blog post performance in search, which is its own thing. Mm. But then we found that we did a split test, and adding video Schema to those videos then increased it even further by like 300%. And yeah. Even if they want to say that it's not a ranking factor, it's one of those ones that, like, it might not be a ranking factor, it might be a ranking factor, but executing it properly on your site definitely has a positive impact.
I love that. And I love having like a concrete tangent to get into some of the more interesting results from testing. As me and my friend Michael McDougall from Right Thing Agency, like, we're always trying to devise like next newest tests that we want to try to suss out and work out. You know, he's very into like trying to define how Google is looking at link authority and how accurate or inaccurate are these tools. Is there anything in PageRank that is truly, like, you know, you can hold that up, or does on its, you know, is that just such a bloated metric that you can't find any value in it, or is there some hyper complicated way that you could test, you know, getting links from this batch of sites versus this batch of sites to kind of prove through some theory of how much of the original PageRank algorithm is still at play when it comes to links? Or is it, you know, I posited the theory that, you know, link value is largely based off of anchor text distributions. And that was my theory behind either anchor text distributions or distance from seed of authority sites in your niche, which, if you think back to like the Medic update, where suddenly, you know, Dr. Axe and all of the, you know, very well written, very well researched, incredibly deep content, but it came from a chiropractor site, suddenly got flipped overnight. And now we have a 2 sentences on a WebMD site is outranking a 5,000 word essay from a PhD, but he happens to be on a, you know, a chiropractor site. So you can see, you know, there's something in that scale that got tweaked in that update specifically that was a peek behind the skirt. But there's also, you know, I have huge questions about, you know, how does Google actually calculate authority when it comes to what people have always assumed that PageRank has been doing?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And yeah, I mean, we use it primarily, like, one, we use it to just test our own theories and everything. Like, our site can almost be like a testing ground in itself for testing new things and that kind of thing. But also to, like, we have this discussion with clients and prospective clients quite a lot, in the sense of, like, they would ask us why would we start testing when, like, I mean, SEO testing has kind of always been done in a sort of really convoluted way, in the sense, like, going back to like when it first started, even, like, you find something that you weren't necessarily happy with, like whether it be like a particular rank for a particular keyword and that kind of thing, you'd then change something in the hopes that that ranking would then go up and then you'd see a benefit from that. So you can kind of class that as a test anyway. But like, yeah, they were like, why would we start testing? And almost the biggest factor that we have is, like, especially for agencies, is it helps you prove your value, because at the end of the day, you do all this research into what might work, and you have all these theories into what to do. And do we need to get links from these particular sites, or do we need to improve our internal linking and that kind of thing? And at the end of the day, if you can run positive SEO tests on a client site and you can say that we did this, this and this over the course of this last month or whatever, and here are the results that, like, we can show you, the client is going to be much happier to, like, keep going with that in a sense of like they can see the value in the work that's been done rather than kind of having to trust the agency by saying that we did this and here are the results and like look at the brand search like that went up so much when in actual fact that it was a different department running a TV ad that month that had an impact and then the SEO agency is trying to claim like credit for that in some way and it absolutely helps across the board.
I think it's definitely a boost to credibility. And even if the test like doesn't actually move the needle that much, it still boosts confidence that you're professional enough to accept defeat of like, hey, we had this theory, we thought it would work, we tested it, it didn't, so we didn't go that way, is provably much more effective and that keeping a client happy than, oh, we've been doing it this way for 6 months and it's not working, versus we spent the time in a month to test going in this direction to do this thing that we think will work. So I could definitely see a confidence boost on that side. What are some of your favorite SEO tests that you guys have seen recently? You might have some stats to throw out there or an experience to reference. Like, what's your favorite right now?
Yeah, so I think like when it comes to that, I mean, if we look at our own site in a sense that like we're a SaaS brand, there's almost very limited in terms of stuff that we can do. But the one I like to point out to people is, I mean, internal linking has always been important. We know that, but I think people like to just. It's almost like become a cookie cutter exercise in the sense like we'll write a blog post, we'll throw in a few internal links like where relevant, and that's that, and that's how, like that's the housekeeping is done. I don't need to go back to that again. But like I think how many tests have we run for internal linking that like on our own? I think 15 or so tests where we've absolutely gone through, found a particular blog post that's either it's underlinked or I think we can link in a better way and that kind of thing. I think almost every single one of those tests has been positive and not just positive by like 3-4%, but I think our biggest one was like 1,000% or something where we added like a ridiculous number of like internal links to this content and the clicks just shot up completely. But I mean, for every positive test, there's a negative test and that kind of thing. Like we've got like test examples where from people who have built out a category page for an e-commerce site and they've added loads of unique information and they've linked to buying guides and stuff and it's had this hugely positive impact. And then on the flip side of that, we've had another e-commerce site that's done the same thing in a slightly different way and it's not had as much of an impact. So it is always interesting to see that way. But this is why we just go back to testing as a way of one, it's a way to, you can kind of use it to inform strategy going forward. You can use it to, I think one of the key uses as well is to avoid any costly mistakes, especially for like big sites mm-hmm. where, okay, we've got an idea, this is kind of risky, but let's go with it anyway. And then we'll see traffic tank. And that's like not the situation that you want at all. But when you can do it, when you can take a section of a site and say, okay, we'll test on this specific section, see what happens. If clicks go up, that can kind of give what, like not just you, but also stakeholders much more confidence to say, okay, let's spend that budget, let's do that work and kind of like that. But yeah, it is always interesting. I think one of the common myths about testing is that like if one thing works, then it will work for everyone. Like for us, content refreshes have been a great source of success in a sense of like taking older blog posts and re-uploading that, like adding new useful content and changing the structure and that kind of thing, and that's been really beneficial for us. But for another website, content refreshes might not work as well or might not work at all, and then for them they can test different ways to grow, like whether that's new content or internal linking or external linking and that kind of thing, and they can test that way.
Is it something where like you can test you know, within or against like industries to try to see if there's best practices that are different for like a real estate agent in Lake Norman versus, you know, a different niche? Have you done any cross-industry testing as far as like executing on a particular strategy?
Not that we've done, no. I think this is one we could probably find some relative industry like benchmarks if we went through and looked at all our client data and did it that way, or used AI to do it like that. So like one of the useful, like the uses of AI could be to do something like that and like split websites out by industry and that kind of thing, and then say, okay, what tests have worked for this industry. But yeah, in terms of, we haven't necessarily done any of that ourselves. That's probably something that we could certainly do, which would then, that could then become a growth loop in itself, like publish that kind of industry study and that kind of thing. So I want to thank you for that, because that's a really good idea.
You're welcome. Come on the podcast and get new content strategies for your SaaS. No, I haven't done that. I'm going to go do that.
Yeah, I'll do it, and then I'll tag you in the post that I share and say this was all Jeremy's idea, so you can go to him. But here are the results.
I love it. As we kind of wrap up, what's a test that you recommend that the SEO or team listening to this podcast goes and tries to do in the day after listening to this? So super actionable. What's your highest value thing that you want them to go out and test or do?
I would say, and it goes back to what we talked about a little earlier, but don't, If you've got areas on your site where you're not implementing or not utilizing structured data, schema, that kind of thing, go through and test that. Like if you've got videos on your site that don't have video schema implemented, go and do that. If you have author pages that don't have schema, go and do that. Even like about pages, like you said, if there is a section of your site or something that you do on your site that could benefit from schema, implement that and just see what happens. Because from looking at our site tests and the tests of some clients as well, like the majority of those test results are overwhelmingly positive, whether it's because it's a ranking factor or not, or whether it just helps Google decide that, okay, this brand is good at this thing and okay, we'll rank them higher here and that kind of thing. So whether it's direct or indirect, I don't know. But from test data, it is one of the most important things you can do.
Fantastic. I agree. And I love that direction. Thanks so much for your insight. Shout out your domain, company, where people can find you on socials.
Yep. So if you're interested in starting testing for your business, you can go to seotesting.com. We've got a 14-day free trial for anyone. You can add up to 30 sites, I think, per trial. So go and start tests on client sites, your own sites, test sites, whatever. If you want to talk about testing with me, you can find me on all the socials, LinkedIn, Blue Sky, Twitter, or X, or whatever it's called now. You can at Ryan Jones SEO. And yeah, that's the same across Blue Sky and Twitter.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you for having me on.